What's up, everybody? New single from the Slackademics out, this one called Our Own Island.
Nothing to phone home about. You're just waiting for Godot. We're on our own little island. Tracy was in the sand.
This vibey reggae track is written by our drummer, Josh. Good job, Josh. I love this song, and honestly, it might be the most fun song we have to play live. Sadly, that doesn't help me understand what the lyrics are about or anything like that. Please give the track a listen and a share on the streamer of your choice. As I've mentioned before, the new Slackademics album, Pass Fail, comes out in April, but you can already pre-order it. Just $10 on our Bandcamp page. And the next Bandcamp Friday is March 6th, which means we don't have to pay Bandcamp any of their cut. On that capitalistic note, let's listen to the soothing sounds of one of our trumpet players, Max. Max, Max.
But there's no one, no one to see you through.
Here's Everywhere Again. I'm going to tell you what you should be listening for.
Thanks, Mark.
The melody. No, but don't.
Mark gets sensitive when I accuse him of mansplaining.
Or, yeah, I'm mansplaining. Or we
but
can
you're
listen.
An expert in the field. You can
this
explain
is,
to
this
me.
Is an audio form. Or I can play the song and then say, what did you hear, Nicole?
And that's.
And then
I don't like
you
that
don't
either.
Get it right. And I go, well, no. Everybody, Jesus Christ.
You're not mansplaining.
I am mansplaining.
You're smart and you know
but
about it.
I am the musician.
Yeah, you are. And I don't know. Okay. I'm asking. Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Never Mind the Music. What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
Today we are talking about, apparently, the most Shazammed indie rock track of 2014.
Ooh.
If I could change your mind, I would hit the ground running. It took time to realize, and I never saw it coming. Forgive my lying eyes.
Yes. Haim. Yeah. You've been on a Haim journey the past couple of years, huh?
I think Haim.
Haim?
Like Lechaim.
Oh.
I think it's a related word. I think it's Haim.
But it's their name.
Yeah. Not Haim. And it's
not Haim.
Generally capital H, capital A, capital I,
oh,
capital M.
Oh, tricky, tricky, tricky.
And
Haim
yeah,
sisters.
Indie rock, sort of pop rock, most Shazammed track from 2014 of that category. So did you use Shazam, do you, or did you?
I don't use Shazam, and I often forget that it like exists in the world.
Right.
Like sometimes
you have to like re-download the app.
No, I have the
have
app. I just forget that it's like a thing that is accessible to me. Like I'm always like, oh, I wonder what that song is, and someone's like, just Shazam it. I'm like, all right, like I can just do that. Like I always forget that that's an option.
You're like doing a melodic dictation and trying to compare it against
like,
published sheet
yes,
music. And
yes,
stuff.
As one does.
I actually wish there was a Shazam where I could hear a melody. Because, like, I'll hear a tune and it'll stick in my head, but I don't have the recording to Shazam. But if you could enter it in as notation, if you could read music, and then it'll tell you what songs it could be, that would be awesome. That would be crazy hard to do, though.
And, like, that's appealing to a pretty small audience.
That's
of people.
Right. Now we're developing an app. So if you could imagine 2014, pop indie rock track, this is kind of catnip for me with the, like, synths in the background
mm-hmm.
and the funky
yeah.
palm muted, they call that a bubble part, their guitar part, vocal harmonies. What store would this? Because that's when you Shazam. I still do have Shazam. I don't use it that much, but it's when I'm in like Christmas shopping and I hear like a really awesome indie pop song and I'm like, who is that?
Okay.
So where would this play that would have been Shazammed more than any other indie rock song in the year?
I mean, probably like an Urban Outfitters or something.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
It?
Urban Outfitters.
Yeah.
Certain certain mall stops.
Right. Yeah. Like a store
that... Because it's not CVS. It's not that kind of thing.
No, that's too mainstream. We want something that like you're shopping there because you want something that's like folky and stands out. So maybe even like an Anthropology.
Interesting.
Or like a Madewell store or something, which is very on the nose brands. If you know. It's a type for sure.
But it's not, they're not playing like actual experimental. It's like indie pop.
Yes.
Still.
Yes. Yeah. So like an Altered State even.
Sure. So this song is kind of a random maybe choice for this podcast, not as famous as some of the other stuff. But I really have gotten into this band. I like this band a lot.
They're very good.
And I wanted to do one of their songs. And part of why I've deep dove so much into this band became a Taylor alternative for my daughter in the car.
Oh, what
like,
a gift.
After one of our laps through the entire oeuvre like of Taylor, I was like...
Sometimes you just need something
else. Can we
else?
Listen to something else? Actually,
anything.
I'm not going to even ask. I'm just going to put on this other band.
Right.
And I tend to counter like... Honestly, though, there's so many mostly female pop stars these days. But to counter a lot of the music that her brother wants to listen to, I'll choose like a girl group or something. Like we're also listening to Paramore and stuff like that.
Paramore is very, very
good. Because I'm like, wait, this is
that.
Rockin', but it's, you know, it's...
And you enjoy it.
And I enjoy it. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's where this all started was try to... The Beatles were a way to get off the kid music train years ago, right? So this band actually has no hits on the Billboard Hot 100, but their albums have done well. So this one, this is their first record, from their first record, Days Are Gone, from 2013, was number 6, and it did go platinum. The second one went with number 7, third, number 13, and the new one, I Quit, which was last year, went to number 25. But, you know, this is one of those, like, critically acclaimed groups, like, they were Best New Artist Grammy nominated for the year, for this album, that year, 2014 Grammys, I think. The Women in Music Part 3... from 2020, nominated for Album of the Year that year.
Wow.
And then I Quit, the new album, the upcoming Grammys, which upcoming for us when we are recording this, but has happened when this will air, was nominated for Rock Album of the Year. So they haven't won any of those yet. So we'll see at the point
maybe
that you're listening
did.
To this, maybe they won.
I'm going to project into the future and say congratulations to them for winning the pop. Or the rock album even, not even pop album.
Yeah, so they're definitely a band, and they rock sometimes, but they pop also, so like...
Yeah, rock pop.
They're a soft rock or pop rock group, I would say. Mm. And this one, written by the band, the three sisters, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, with James Ford, who also produced the song. In terms of why we get to talk about it, aside from I love the vibe, it did reach number 42 on the Billboard rock charts, so
All right.
It was a moderate hit in the... rock community, and that tells you they're a rock band, right?
They're a
they
rock
scored
band.
Higher on that chart than on the pop
but
charts.
But this isn't their most well-known song.
Yeah, so from that album, The Wire and Forever were actually higher.
The Wire
just
is
a little bit.
Very, very good song.
Yeah, those are both good
they're
songs,
great.
But especially The Wire.
Yeah.
Kind of, they're still in that mid-range rock charts, 20s, 30s kind of thing. Their highest ever is Now I'm In It from 2019.
Okay.
Which sounds like that Savage Garden song. Cherry Cola.
Oh, I don't know that one. Anytime I need to see your face, I just close my eyes and I am taken to a pursuit of crystal mind. A magenta
feeling, take a chapter in the face of my spine, straight like a Cherry Cola. I'll pipe it in later.
Yeah.
I don't have it queued up. But
I like Little of Your Love. That's like one of my favorite.
That's a really good song.
It's
I really like
good
that
song.
That's very almost Motown-y, right? Now I'm in it, and also I Want You Back. So now I'm in
it. Oh, I Want You Back is so good too.
Now I'm in it, hit number 9. Want You Back hit number 10, right?
They're, and that's a great song. Band.
Now I'm in it, I don't like as much as any of those other ones, but Want You Back's cool.
Yeah.
So like they have a few hits, but even then that's the rock charts, right?
Okay.
So anyways though, I had some things I wanted to say about this song. It's cool. Y'all should listen to them. So we're doing this episode.
We're doing it.
And before we get into what we're really talking about, this may be one of those, like, Mark just wants to play clips.
Yes. For,
to
I
educate
hear them.
People. So I do want to call out one significant aspect to their sound. That's part of what's cool about it. And hopefully this doesn't run afoul of our conversation on homage being actually plagiarism from a couple weeks back.
Here we go.
Because I think, basically, so lead vocalist Danielle Heim, she's the middle sister. She also stands in the middle. She's also the kind of more shredder on the guitar and a good drummer and stuff. They do stand in height order, which I think is cute. We can talk more about their live show later because I saw them relatively recently. But the other sisters sing leads sometimes, but she's the primary singer. And she very clearly to me is paying homage, evoking other famous female artists. And I don't know anything without me even saying who I think. Does anything jump to mind for you?
I mean, I feel like Sheryl Crow, Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, Sheryl Crow, yeah. 100%. Alanis, maybe a little less snarl to
but
some
like
of her.
Janis Joplin, Stevie Nicks. I'm just thinking of iconic female singers.
And I think this is not, you know, other people have written about this, but also they're owning it. Their third album is called Women in Music Part 3.
Yeah.
And so many of those songs are homages stylistically. Let me just zero in on a few that I think could work. So first one, I think, is the one that jumped out to me first, which is Christine McVie from Fleetwood Mac. And here's Christine McVie singing the Fleetwood Mac tune, 1987's Everywhere.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I'm falling and I don't know what to say. I'll speak a little louder, I'll even shout.
And here's You Never Knew by Heim from 2017.
It used to be when we were alone, we shared such beautiful moments.
But lately it's been such a mess.
I come on and say it. Was my love too much for you to take? I guess you never knew.
Yeah, it's this like ethereal syncopation.
There's definitely a lot of syncopation, but just the tone of her voice, it's sort of dark, ethereal works. Here's another example, similarly, I think sounds a lot like Christine McVie, Don't Save Me from 2013. This song, vibe-wise, is a little more high energy than that sort of thing, though.
Yeah, their tones are similar. I mean, she's reading more as Sheryl Crow to me on that example as far as like tonality.
Okay, well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
See, I hear a lot of Christine McVie there, but we'll get to Sheryl Crow.
I've just recently realized that Sheryl Crow's awesome.
Same, actually.
I never like
I always liked her songs.
Yeah, but
she's,
I just like
she is quite
listen
awesome.
To like her like just one after the other. I'm like, wow, she has a lot.
I'd
of
I never
hit
listened
songs.
To a Sheryl Crow record until a few months ago,
and
I really
read,
enjoyed
like,
it.
Like greatest hits records, it's like Carole King's Tapestry all over
You've
again.
Forgotten a lot of the songs,
and they're good.
And in terms of the Fleetwood Mac thing, Heim is apparently co-writing a song with Stevie Nicks.
Oh my gosh,
that might actually be out by the time this. Like, I just checked; it has not come out as of our recording.
Them
of this.
And Stevie Nicks and Taylor Swift are for sure hanging out with each other.
That's
it's
so
not
cool.
like a made up thing. They definitely get together and hang out and like talk about being women in music. And I'm
and Stevie has said nice things about them in the past. She even they played together. Do you know the Stevie Nicks solo song? Well, no, it's a duet with Tom Petty. Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Oh yeah,
They played that live with her and the Foo Fighters, like as the band playing
what?
It. And they were singing with her. Like, and then, and at a tribute when Christine McVie died, I don't know if she played it or someone performed it or just they played the song. Somehow their song, Hallelujah, Haim's song, was used in tribute to McVie.
Oh,
so
I wish I was at that Foo Fighters show.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can see. I don't know the context, though. Like,
it's
what?
Not the same.
What's the story there? Yeah, YouTube is not the same. And of course, you mentioned Sheryl Crow. If anybody doesn't know Sheryl Crow, here's Soak Up the Sun, one of her big hits,
so good.
2002.
It's not having what you want, it's wanting what you've got. I'm gonna soak up the sun, I'm gonna tell everyone to lighten up.
I mean, that's not even her best song, but it's a great example of like...
her tone.
Their tones are like clean. They have just nice, clean, pure tones.
So listen, this is Haim. Okay. I've Been Down from 2020.
Would you even pick me out in a crowd? Cause I can't recognize myself now. And I'm turning away hell. Can you pull me out?
Very Sheryl Crow.
So good. And then also you have to remember that we have a schema in our heads about what a long-haired white woman with a guitar is going to sound. Like, they match. Do you know what I mean? Like, aesthetically, they match each other.
Well, how about the third person I was about to talk about, Annie Lennox?
Oh,
not
that's
long-haired.
A different. Yeah, that's a different.
I mean, but maybe sometimes, but I don't think, generally speaking, Annie Lennox. Here's Annie Lennox, Walking on Broken Glass.
Her songs are so good. We need to be listening to more of this.
1992, yeah.
No, Haim is like the middle of a Venn diagram of all three of those.
Right.
Folks.
Well, so when here's Founded in Silence from 2017, I think sounds a lot like Annie Lennox.
Another great song. And it's the arrangement here. Like if you
the strings, chugging strings. And this goes back to our episode, if you haven't listened to it yet, from a couple of weeks ago. Like, if we take copyright law enforcement too strictly, what good art doesn't get made?
Yeah.
If the vibe of Annie Lennox is Walking on Broken Glass, if you're too close to the vibe, you get sued. You're not copying the melody.
Music?
You're not copying the lyrics.
Okay.
Go ahead. Right. So we can think about that as we hear artists that are referential. And this band, I think one of their new singles, Relationships, sounds like Janet Jackson. Like they, first of all, Danielle Haim has a lot of control over her voice. She can kind of just make it sound like whatever.
Yeah. The lines are really blurred on copyright stuff.
Nice. Nice. That was great.
Yeah, right?
Did you just come up with that or did you show up?
No, okay, I came up with it just now.
So moving on. So obviously this is a family band and
family
everybody. We want to talk about family bands and a sidetrack coming up.
We will.
But just in left to right order on stage, but reverse order age-wise is Alana, Danielle, and Esty Haim, right? So Danielle's vocals, lead vocals usually with guitar and drums and stuff, and Esty is bass, and Alana is guitar and percussion and some other things like that. And they all sing. They were apparently in a band with their parents before they started
Haim.
I don't remember what they're called. That would be pretty funny if that's true.
Nice.
But Danielle was a touring guitar player for Julian Casablancas.
I have no clue who that is.
It's the Strokes guy.
Okay.
The lead vocalist in the Strokes. And okay, Let's talk about them on stage.
Okay.
Have you seen Haim live?
Well, I haven't seen them live.
No.
Stop talking about it.
And the reason is because you are quite lame.
I am
lame. Can we say it? Is that fair?
No.
What happened? Listen. We were going to go to see Haim. No. This was a few months back in the early fall.
We weren't going to go. It's not like we had tickets. Like 2 days before the show, you were like, let's get tickets to see Haim. And I was
we had talked about it,
we
though.
We talked
you
about
told
it.
Me it was happening.
I told you the show was happening because you said you were really into this band. I was like, they're coming on tour soon. Maybe we could go. And then like we never talked about it again. And then 2 days before the show, you're like, tickets are still available. Let's go. But also that same day, 2 days prior in Nicole's world, I was poolside and I drank too. It was poolside. It was summertime. And I had drank too many High Noons. And I was like, you know what would be fun to do tomorrow night is go to see Benson Boone. And I bought Benson Boone tickets. And then the next day went to see it. It was an
So you were all booned out when I asked
so
you about.
I so booned out. And I was like, I'll go to see Haim. That sounds fun. But then I went to Benson Boone. And then school started the next day, which was a poor decision to go to a concert before the first day of school. And then I remembered that I'm old now. And I can't go see two concerts.
I said you were lame. I mean, that's,
I know.
That's the same thing.
I feel kind of cool, but I do feel lame now. I definitely feel like I missed out. I definitely, you'll never regret going to the show. You'll always regret not going.
Unless something terrible happens to you?
Unless
yes,
something correct. Terrible happens. You're never going to say.
Even your bummer Colin Hay concert gave an interesting conversation for us to have.
And then I felt like the social pressure to go because I was like, well, poor Mark. I'm pretty much your only friend, so
that's right.
Who is he going to go with? And he really wants to see the show. And then I was like, I should go for him. Like, I owe it to Mark to get it together for the show.
I had to increase the number of white dudes at the show.
Yeah.
The average was rather low.
I believe that.
For an indie rock concert. So my friend Mike, who's always down to go, he went with me.
Yeah.
And he even knew how to, like, no, let's wait till the last second
you
and
have
then
to
buy
do it.
Tickets.
That's what you do.
We got to be in the front area, you know, standing for way cheaper.
There's a new venue I haven't been to yet. I wanted to check out that venue.
Yeah, it was cool. So yeah, they were good. They were really good.
Who's your favorite Haim sister?
I think my favorite. This is like one of those very different from who is the best Haim sister.
Okay.
My favorite, I think, is Esty.
Mine too.
Esty, people watch a video. I love a bass player with a really intense stage vibe. She does, my friend Mike called it bass face. She just makes this, like, she's just so into it. She's like transported to another world with her facial expressions, just so like feeling the music. And she plays really well and she sings. She actually has a song, you know, Danielle Haim is just so good as a frontman, but she has a song on the new album that she's got pipes. I just cried. Like, Esty Haim sings really well. And it's not that she sings better than Danielle. It's just that it's like a different sound. You're like, wow, how is she not
doing
four?
Is she the youngest?
Four? She's the oldest.
Oh.
So, like, I think of it always as, like, there's the Taylor axis.
Yeah.
I think, like, Danielle and Taylor are about the same age. And then Esty's a couple years older.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alana's a couple years younger.
You know, Esty's and Taylor are closer friends.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. She has a song about her.
And Alana's the one who's in like Licorice Pizza and in films and stuff, which I haven't seen yet. But people say that movie's amazing.
People talk about that movie. Never seen it.
I think it's Paul Thomas Anderson and really critically, but like very indie.
Yeah, it'd have to be.
But,
it's on brand,
but
you know.
I wanted to talk about the concert because aside from Esty's bass face being super exciting, and I considered actually bringing my daughter, and I'm glad I did not because it was not safe for work or like
safe, like
literally
because it was
literally there were like F-bombs projected on stage because there's a whole part of the, I don't want to get into the new album that much because we're talking about their oldest album, but the album I Quit is their new album and it's apparently the first time they've recorded a record all bitterly single or whatever. Like someone's always been either in a relationship or married or whatever
bitterly
and
single.
I think that's the vibe they're taking.
Yeah,
it's a very like we don't need you kind of, that's what a lot of the songs, not all of them, but it's a vibe. And so there was this I quit motif visually projected with lights that would sometimes be like, and fuck you, like stuff like that. I don't want to say it said fuck you, but it was that
so
kind of thing. And
I'm like, past it.
Whereas the reason I didn't take her is like, oh, it's going to be so late.
It's late. And like, they can't see. And like, these kids, like, you need, it's really tough. I bring my daughter to a lot of concerts. I always say, like, bring your kids to shows, like, get them to live music. But like, we need to be really mindful about where we sit just so she has visibility to the stage.
So glad she didn't come.
Yeah.
But two things I wanted to call out, like, and one of them, let's use a setup for our family band discussion.
Okay.
The vibe was so surprising. Their vibe as three sisters.
I bet.
Because Danielle is the lead vocalist. She is this powerful force on the guitar. Really good drummer. Her voice can do anything. She probably said five words the entire time.
Mm.
Let's say she accounted for 5% of their banter.
Okay.
Esty accounted for 15% more of their banter. Yeah. And the little one, who's also the littlest.
Yeah.
And probably the least, and this says nothing about her skill, but the least featured as an instrumentalist and a vocalist in the sense she has her songs too, but like she's not ripping in guitar solos. She's more the rhythm guitarist.
She's like the personality hire.
Oh my God. Alana Haim, who in Hollywood films is the most chatty person in the world. And it's like really cute and fun. And also like I could imagine, I was just picturing in my mind's eye as this was happening, Danielle just turning and being just, shut the fuck up, Alana. Because it's like, it was so much
like little sister vibe.
Little sister vibe. And it was so fascinating for us to talk about like family bands in our sidetrack. Tune in next week. I was watching this. This like overlooked middle sister who's actually maybe the best one, but doesn't talk. And the kind of commanding bass face presence of Esty. And then just nonstop jokes.
Yapping.
Like cornball dad jokes coming out of this like 30-year-old musician. Yeah. It was so
we
funny.
We often see middle children as like mediators between the two sides.
Well, we talked about that with Oasis.
Yeah. And so it seems like it's mapping to Haim as well.
Danielle stops Esty from just like tackling Alana to try to get her to stop talking. But yeah, no, they were really fun. Oh, also Esty, what makes her the best, my favorite? Music major alert.
Oh, nice.
She has a UCLA degree in ethnomusicology.
Ethnomusicology.
And this is the weird thing because I was probably there when she was there. Because I have a master's degree dated a little before that, but I started a PhD before I jumped for where I ended up getting my doctorate.
All right, Mark.
And no, but like...
okay.
I don't think I was her TA for theory, but UCLA back then had the weirdest ethnomusicology, which is like cultural study of music.
That's
would
cool.
be the major they would assign you. This is how bonkers they were structured back then. And I think it's changed. If you were like a pop guitar major, they'd be like ethnomusicology. She probably was a bass major or a voice major.
Like a performance major?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. She probably wasn't a scholar. I mean, I'm not saying she could have been, but most of the ethnomusicology majors I knew were like jazz piano. And they would go, oh, it's not classical music. It's ethnomusicology. You could be doing freaking EDM and they'd be like, you're ethnomusicology.
It is though ethnomusicology.
But if that...
It is.
But to say that musicology means white European music that is classical and every other type of music that's ever been created is ethnomusicology is very Eurocentric.
Well, yeah, of course it's Eurocentric.
And that's not...
is higher ed.
That's not UCLA's fault, but they were totally back in the early 2000s falling right
into
that trap.
I wonder if they've changed.
I think they have changed.
I think they would probably have to.
But anyways, their set. I want to talk about their set real quick because this relates to this like nostalgia experience, which they're not. They're not a nostalgia band, right? Because they've only been around for a little over a decade. They played. Oh, and I teased this in our mailbag episode. I listened to this album. I'd heard their new album like once before this came out. And I was like, I looked on Setlist FM. Do I need to hear this album a bunch more? Because I don't want to. What if they play the whole freaking second out or the whole freaking fourth album?
You
need
to be doing your homework.
I needed, and I looked, they're playing a lot of that new. And so they played one song from their first album, which is the one with some of my favorite songs by them. Two songs from the second, they played like I Want You Back and one other one. And then a handful from their third, 11 songs from the new record.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't go, I guess, because I wouldn't have known it.
And look, they're good songs. I've listened to that record since then a bunch. I like them. That was a lot. Yeah. I think that's a lot to do. And I remember making fun of bands when I was like a teenager or whatever going to a punk show and they'd be like, another song from a new album. And we were like, no, the first album.
Right.
And like, they really hit. They were really wanted us to go listen to that first,
and
that new album.
Turns out it worked.
It worked.
Yeah.
But I wonder, that decision-making between the three of them or their promoters or whatever, like, is a interesting to be on a fly on the wall of that conversation to not go, hey, we got a couple songs that people really know us for.
Right.
We should probably do some. No, they did a fair amount from that third record, which was the Grammy nom record. But 11 from a new song out of 14 or whatever on the new record, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's their prerogative. Mm. Not a nostalgia. Now, a nostalgia group couldn't do that, right?
No.
Nostalgia group could only
do the hits.
They
need to do the hits.
Right.
No one wants. It's like a GB band playing when they say, now we're going to play one of our originals. It's like, no thanks.
Totally.
I've learned so much from this
band.
I say that
we're gonna do one of our originals. Not a thing at a wedding. So I want to talk about melodic phrasing and rhythm and melody and stuff. What do you want to grab onto
in like the FOMO aspect of what I started thinking about it with this concert. Like, I did have a lot of fear of missing out.
Okay, so not the song, not Haim, but like the experience of me going to the concert.
Yeah, I want to talk about the experience of you going without me.
FOMO.
FOMO. Do you want me to get into it?
Let's do it now. It's just going to be weird if we come back to this after I talk
about
myself. So what
do you know about, like, how do you think of, like, the fear of missing out? Is that something you experience a lot, or just brain dump to me, like, what you know about that?
I think I am I am a late adopter.
Okay.
Whether it's fashion or even some music with technology, like, I'll got a smartphone way after everybody else. So I think I don't really have fear of missing out, except for the social aspects of it. As a kid, I couldn't stand being in a group of people and two of my friends whispering to each other and wondering, it's social anxiety. Are they talking about me, or are they planning on a thing that I don't get to be a part of? There was the fear of missing out because of what it reflected of my social standing and my own psychology, not the fear of missing out about the experience. Maybe I don't even want to do the thing they're talking about.
I just want to
be asked.
Yeah,
right?
I get that.
So
yeah.
I feel like that's slightly adjacent,
it's
but
like
related.
It's like an in-group, out-group thing.
Yes.
Like, you don't want to be left out. Right?
I have that more than I do actually terrible
missing
regrets.
Missing the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really...
No, obviously, you know, you never regret going to the concert.
Yeah.
That's true.
No, and I think that when we talk about fear of missing out, it does relate more to the lack of social inclusion more than the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to go bowling. But if all my friends are going bowling, I want to go because I don't want to be the one that's not there.
You don't want to miss the inside jokes that are
invented. Yeah, like I don't want to miss that. So we talk about this like a motivational and emotional state of missing out, but it's based on a psychological theory called self-determination theory. And self-determination theory says
SDT.
SDT. That's what they call it.
Post-grunge band.
Oh, that's cool.
STP.
Oh, interesting. Tricky, Mark. That SDT relates to this idea that humans have three basic psychological needs for
We get a list.
Guess what the three basic psychological needs of humans are.
So this is not Maslow.
This is not Maslow in his hierarchy.
Which maybe we'll talk about one of these days. That's psych 101 stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit with songs. Okay. Basic psychological need.
Like, what do people need to be psychologically healthy? Yeah. Sure. Maybe.
Like self, not self-confidence, but like sort of a sense of self, like stable sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just say like safety on some level.
Sounds
kind
good.
Of.
Yeah,
I know that's,
like, yeah,
that's what I got. Love.
Like,
I don't know. Like,
you're like circling around
the drain.
How SDT or self-determination theory consolidates like the three basic psychological needs of autonomy, that you get to decide what you want to do you want to do it. Competence, that you have the ability to do that thing, not just that you want to do it, but you're able to do it. And relatedness, which is that like interconnected
connection.
Desire to feel included. So when we talk about FOMO, it's
hang on.
Yeah.
Check for understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Autonomy.
Yep.
Competence.
Yep.
Connectedness.
Relatedness.
I was going for the three C's.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice way to remember it.
But it's wrong. CCR.
No, it's the same thing.
Credence Clearwater Revival. Okay.
Well,
so,
autonomy, competence.
Oh, it's A. Sorry. Yeah.
And relatedness. But
ACR.
You're understanding it. You're just not using the similar vocabulary, which
Got
is something very common in psychology, that you understand it, but you just haven't applied this
so sort of like
self-determination theory
freedom,
yet.
Like skill or like expertise, mm-hmm. and community is another way.
Yeah, it's like
about
you have the choice to go or to not go. You have autonomy.
Uh-huh.
You have competence, like you are able to go.
Right.
And relatedness that your social group is going.
Sure.
So those three things together will help you make a decision to go and do the thing if you hold those three opportunities.
Yeah.
You have the choice to go. You're not told you have to. You get to pick.
Mm-hmm.
You have a way to get there. You have a ticket. You have the money to buy the ticket. There's no hindrance there. And like your friends are going too. So when all of those things are happening and you still say no, you get this feeling of FOMO because you could have. There was nothing stopping you.
So
and you still decided to stay home.
How does it change if you get 2 out of 3?
Then
so let's say you had the ability to go. Like what was missing? Which things were missing in yours or were none of them missing? And so you have FOMO.
That's just it. None of them were missing and I had FOMO.
It's not like you had a work conflict and you're like, well, I'm not going to feel bad about that.
Right. It's not like I couldn't afford the ticket. It's not like I didn't have, my car wasn't starting.
It's not like you were alone at the show.
I couldn't have a babysitter or something. Like there was nothing getting in the way of me going. And I still said, no, I'm not going to go.
So because there was this other thing that was a priority, right? Like your own psychological exhaustion or whatever.
Well, yeah, like my need for rest and my just innate introversion, I think.
But that doesn't, especially in our culture, which rewards go, that doesn't count as preventing, that's not enough to prevent FOMO.
It's not enough to prevent FOMO. You'll still feel that you missed something, right? Because of this like social comparison piece. And that's what you were talking about before is like, you don't want to be the one left out. Like if everyone's going and you didn't go, how are people going to think about you? Oh, yeah. I love this band. I know I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. I know Mark's going to go. I know he's going to want to talk about it. It would be better if I was there. So then we could have like a peer conversation and not him just telling me about the concert. I could experience it with him, right? That social comparison piece. So there's also a lot of FOMO around like anticipatory anxiety around an event. Like for me, oftentimes I'll be able to go. I'll have competence. I'll have autonomy. I'll make the choice to go. I'll have a way to get there. I have friends that are going to be there. And I don't go because I'm anxious. I'm just an anxious person. And I know that it's a new venue. I don't know where to park. I don't know how to get in the gate. I don't know where my seats are. I don't know how late I'm going to be out. What if something happens at the concert that goes wrong? Like, all of these things prevent me from going, even though I have the means and competence to get there. My anxiety will hold me back. And that usually causes me FOMO too.
Because it's like, not one of those three things preventing you from
going. It's my own self.
A separate thing prevents you.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable to FOMO. I'm trying to think of a scenario. If it was just stupidly expensive, I don't have FOMO for not taking my daughter to see the Taylor Swift Eras Tour. I do not. All right, and she probably doesn't either, because it was just not an option at all.
No.
Right?
Well, that's just it. It wasn't an option at all. But if you had a ticket and you were just like, it was a school night or whatever, and you know,
I'm tired. That would be a problem in our household. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, interesting.
So then I think about this, you know, anxiety piece with FOMO that we get into what some feminist psychologists call... kind of applied differently here, but like the tyranny of the shoulds. Like I should go, right? Like I have like an obligation to go. And that's what I felt with Haim. It's like, oh, I should go. Like I have agency, I have money, I have means, I have friends there. And like, I should go because it's kind of for work. If this is work, right?
Damn, I wish I was organized enough to like write that shit off.
Right?
The ticket. I mean, it's for work. We're doing a literal episode about
it. So... that's another thing that gets in the way of this FOMO piece is that like your own psychological blockage to actually get out the door. And we see that a lot with like generalized anxiety disorder, agoraphobia, social anxiety, things like that. But usually, you know, I know from my experience with my anxiety, that's not so much to overcome. Once I'm there, it's always fine. Like I always have a great time. It's just like getting there can be a roadblock for me. But lately, I've been trying to flip and teach my kid, because she has quite a bit of FOMO, I think everyone does, but about JOMO? Any idea what J-O-M-O?
Joy of missing out?
The joy of missing out.
Okay.
Like the don't, like cancel plans, stay home, get cozy, watch Stranger Things for the millionth time, like be chill at home and don't think, oh, I should be there. And I think like, oh, I get to stay home and rest, right? I get to to give myself a night off. We had so much fun at Benson Boone. Let me give myself the gift of not being trashed for the next week because I'm old and it takes me a while. Let me find joy in introversion.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it's all, we talked about this a couple months ago in one of our episodes, like taking a personal day from school. Let's just not go to school.
A brain break.
Brain break. That's right. Just don't go to school. And I'm like, yeah, great. Except we also now have an epidemic of people taking brain breaks and nobody is.
Well, this is more like, you know, the school, the thing about school that you don't have FOMO at school. Like,
right.
You don't have autonomy at school. Like, you have to be there legally.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. Like, you can take a brain break if you want, but if you're absent 10 days.
Default is you got to go to school.
You got to go to school, right? There's not like free will or choice. Same with work. I mean,
social pressure with my oldest, it's transitional with my youngest, but my oldest, social pressure is far stronger than any other pressures in life right now,
yes.
Right? And literally, it's under 20 and knock, knock, knock on the door and they're like, hey, come play. We're playing football. We're going to play tackle football on the hard ass turf. And my son's like, I don't want to go. I guess I'm going. Like,
right.
And he's like, no. And they're like, come on. And he's like, all right. Because they need him. They need an even number of kids or whatever. And we're just like, you can say no. It's literally freezing. And he comes back. He's like, I shouldn't have gone. I'm too cold. I'm like, don't.
Yeah.
It's like the joy of missing out. But he doesn't want to be the one who ruins it for everybody.
Right. Oh, poor
but like,
buddy.
And so, and I'm looking, I'm thinking of his group of friends.
Character.
I'm like, do five of the six of those kids not want to play football right now?
Right.
And one of them does. And they all feel like, well, but that's what community is.
That's
kinda.
What community is.
And so you have to learn to balance that. Like, yeah none of us want to do it, but we do this. This
but
is
I
a thing we do.
For this, FOMO is like you're not putting your psychological needs first. You're doing it because you feel like you are going to miss something if you don't. And my kid had this experience this week. We were going to a pretty big concert on Sunday night of this past weekend. And it was with like 10 girls and their moms. And we were hanging out before, It was like a social marathon.
Whole thing.
Whole thing. And then day before we were like chilling at home and her friend invited her to go out to see a play or a movie or something with a bunch of girls. And she's like, well, I don't want to miss out. It was nice of them to invite me, but I know if I go today, I'm not going to have enough energy to do what I have to do at this concert tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. And she like wrestled with it. She's like, I said to her, I was like,
very mature.
It took her a while to get there and I let her like process it out. But I said, like, when you like close your eyes and you think what you want this afternoon to look like, what do you see? And she's like, I want to be home.
Chill.
And relax.
Yeah.
So I was like, then you can do that. And
so that's the JOMO.
That's the JOMO. And like your friends are going to be your friends, whether or not you go or not. And if they're not your friends, if you don't go, then maybe that's not a good friendship, right? It's hard to teach.
So you didn't go to the Heim show. Did you have FOMO or JOMO?
I have FOMO.
Okay. Yeah.
I do.
Because the relatedness of me going to a con, it's just too much.
It's too much. It sounds like a really great time. And now you're playing it live and you're talking about the banter and like, oh.
Except you didn't know that album and you're like, okay,
I did,
maybe.
And that's the thing. Like, I didn't know that album. And that's that competence piece that gets
in the
way of the FOMO. It's like, okay, that's the reason. That's why I'm like, okay, I'm okay with it. Because I am not competent in that music that they were playing. If you went and they played all the songs I love and I saw the set list and every song was like, oh,
you'd be bummed.
I'd be super bummed. I'd have even more FOMO. But the fact that I'm lacking like competence around what they performed makes it easier for me to swallow.
Sure. All right. Well, sorry to have contributed to your psychological distress.
I mean, that's minor. I've gone through more major psychological distresses.
Because of me.
Because of you. Yeah, maybe. They haven't seen the text messages.
Oh, my gosh. What do you mean you're 3 minutes late?
No.
Actually, you're like 15 minutes early.
I'm always early.
One time you were here before I was here. I was still dropping off my
kid. The thing with our text messages is what we do is we both, I think, use the talk to type.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I use that. And so it's imagine this
nonsense
conversation. But just like in text.
Stream of consciousness.
It is, and I don't hate it.
All right. So. Can we talk music here?
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about this band and this song. So in previous episodes, like Kylie Minogue, Oasis, I've talked about the shape of a melody and how the notes are chosen. And in others, I've done tension in chords and dissonance in chords, you know, the true episode back to the beginning of season one. Here I'm kind of going to put it together. And so the song lyrically, I think, is kind of like a I made a mistake and now I want you back, which is honestly, I think, several of their songs.
Yeah. Don't they have a song called I Want You Back?
I think they definitely do. And I think this, the construction, music construction I want to talk about is kind of the interaction of tension in the chords versus a lack of tension in the chords with the melody. And if that kind of relates to the theme of the sort of regret, I mean, this song, FOMO, you say, but like, if I could change your mind, is really about like, it seems like I made a decision to end this, or I did something that ended this. And now I'm wondering if I could get you to change your mind and take me back. And so is that FOMO? I don't know. But I'm talking about the tension carried within their phrasing.
Great.
Okay. So let's just remind ourselves how this song sounds, and then we'll go kind of piece by piece. Here's the chorus of this tune, If I Could Change Your Mind.
If I could change your mind.
Is this a standout to you from them or not
it's
really?
It's not. Not really.
No? Oh, this one just does it for me. So, okay.
I can see why.
It's obvious. I'm predictable. Okay. So melodies have notes, right? And there's chords playing behind the notes. And the melody sometimes plays or sings, in this case, the notes that are in that chord. Like if it's a C chord, C, E, G. If you're singing a C, an E, or a G, you are in that chord. If you're on a different note, like a D, we call that a non-harmonic tone.
Okay.
Something that is tense. And oftentimes those notes resolve. So if you did a C, you would go to a D and then keep going to an E to be back in the chord. Or you would go back to the C, right? And there's just most melodies are somewhere between a third and two thirds of the notes aren't even in the harmonies. And that's what gives them tension. And I want to talk about elements of that in this song that are sticky, that really linger and lean on the chord,
that,
right?
Like, don't resolve quick enough for
they
us.
They don't resolve quick enough. Exactly right. So if like I'm supposed to go da 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 is my note, but I go da 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 da, that one goes by so fast. I'm talking about da 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 and holding it out and really milking it, right? To the point that it almost changes the stability of the chord. And what I want to show is how in this case it really moves the melody forward. And like when we talked about the Shaggy tune, like the pacing of the unfolding of the song is affected by this element.
It's so funny, ever since we recorded that episode, it's like all I hear now when I, because I like to count meter when I'm driving.
Yeah.
And I,
you're hearing the speeding up
I'm
and the slowing
it.
Down.
And like the swing eighths and stuff like that. Like
it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So thank you for
I
teaching
wanna
me.
I want to be with you everywhere. Yeah.
It's even there.
Oh, yeah, long note and I want to be with you. And then it's fast. Yeah, absolutely.
What
the pacing.
What a common convention.
So we're talking more about the pacing as it relates to the tension of the melody, less on the rhythm here. So let's hear the verse of this song to kind of deconstruct a bit of what I'm talking about.
No, please don't cry. I've never done this before. Drove a million miles.
Gotta love Estee's bass.
So good.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of non-harmonic tones in this. Most of the notes in the melody fit the chords, which were sort of in either F major or D minor, which are, we call those relative keys. They're similar. It's ambiguous, actually, which is, you know, charming in this particular case. We've got a D minor, B flat, C, B flat. Those are our four chords in that order, right? If we simplify the melody, getting rid of some of the quick notes and just focus on the most important notes, I'll play those on the piano. Listen, this is what I think are kind of the anchors, the outline of that melody. Yeah?
Yeah.
You buy it?
I buy it.
So note, though, that second chord, the note clashes. Listen again. Yeah. Of those four, there's four chords and four sort of highlight notes in the melody. And they're all in the chord except for that second one, which clashes a bit.
No. Please don't cry.
That one, that's crunchy. All the other ones fit, but that second one creates something that we talked about actually in our episode on Defying Gravity. This is called an add nine chord.
Okay.
It's a B flat chord with a C on it. So we call that then the added ninth.
And I realized that I love songs that have this added ninth chord.
Right. It was every musical song basically.
I played
something from Hamilton.
And this one.
Yeah. Which doesn't really sound like musical theater. So it's basically the second note of each four is the one with the dissonance.
Mm.
Not at the end. The ending of the phrase, it's just a consonant part of that B flat chord. It's in the middle that like pulls us forward without ending on tension. The verse doesn't end on tension. It just kind of keeps you moving. Let's hear the second half of the verse section.
Back.
So similar, slight melody change, but it's the same thing. You're going to hear it with the piano emphasizing the main note. Everything is within the chords except for the second one, which doesn't give us that C. It's a G. This is a B flat add six chord. Again, kind of a crunchy, jazzy harmony. The second chord only has this crunchiness. That one there.
Yeah.
So this is a bit different than when we did the Spandau Ballet song. I was talking about how the dissonant note was like on the high money note.
Yeah.
True. Right. He's doing that emotional note.
It's like a million years ago.
It was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And this isn't climactic. This is controlling the pacing of our phrase. So if I play the chords with the melody notes on top, just notice how the second chord, the second in each set of four, is where the dissonance is. It's not at the end of the phrase, but it pulls us along. Here we go. This is sort of speeding through it. That one. And then starts again. That one. I don't know. What do you think? You hearing what I'm talking about?
I'm hearing what you're talking about, but also I'm hearing musical theater in that. When you just play the chords... Maybe because you primed me for it, but it sounds like Rent for sure.
Bum, bum. That's
the 500.
Should I pump it? Should I pipe in the... I think I used that as one of the examples when we did The Wicked.
It's
add nine chords at the start of Seasons of Love. Absolutely.
Right.
You're totally right. I'll pipe it in later.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Not exactly, but...
Close.
Same chord.
Close enough,
it's,
man.
And it's literally a B flat, which
I'm
is the
it.
Exact same chord.
Yes.
So good
I
job.
I like the best.
So,
I'm going to get an A this semester for sure.
you're definitely going to get an A. Yeah. You know what, though? Don't plagiarize the last second. Last semester, I had a student at the end of the last assignment cheat at the very end of the semester. It's being like investigated by the dean of students. Like,
awful.
Don't. Huh? No, you were doing fine. I know you're too stressed to do the last
They're
assignment.
Just too stressed.
Just
These
don't do the
babies.
Last assignment then. Get a zero. I dropped the lowest assignment.
Oh, bud. Just drop it.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to talk about it. It's stressing me out.
I have a couple students that like just didn't do the last assignments worth like 20 points and you just didn't submit the paper. Like you could have submitted anything. Just submit anything. And it's just, what are you doing?
So, okay, now I'm trying to argue that it controls the pacing by the middle kind of pulling us along in the verse.
It does.
Now, if I told you the next section was a pre-chorus.
Okay.
What have you learned in this podcast about pre-choruses to expect what that might do?
You know what? We haven't. I feel like we probably have talked about like the structure of songs, but I think we need to do more about like songwriting.
Form.
Like the form of song.
Form is hard because of the small clips I play.
Yeah, I can understand.
Because what I need to do for form when I do it in my class, we listen to the whole damn song.
You have to.
Because you have to chart that pacing. Well, I'll find a way.
I mean, I think that, like, so I don't really know it. They always talk about, like, your bridge and pre-chorus and chorus.
We're
like,
going to the chorus. What do you do before the chorus?
You, like, kind of warm up to it a little bit.
Yeah, you build up. You build up energy.
Build up energy, build tension.
If you want to
foreshadow a little bit.
If anybody wants to learn about pre-chori,
that can't be right.
Listen to our episode from early season one about Everybody Talks by Neon Trees, because they have a dissonant chord. They have a syncopated rhythm. They're throwing the kitchen sink at a tense pre-chorus.
I think that might be one of the only times we talked about form explicitly like that.
And even then we were kind of talking about chords and melody and rhythm. So here's the pre-chorus of this song. And maybe it's building up tension at the end, not in the middle of the phrase.
But if I was to say, I regret it.
Yeah, it kind of puts us in a holding pattern a little bit, like, and kind of getting that momentum ready for the chorus.
So what we have, I'll do my little piano highlight thing.
I love it.
Every single chord has a melody note, a main melody note that is consonant and totally in the chord, except for the last. Mm. And we get this D minor chord with a G, which is the fourth, a D minor add four. That's a weird chord. We get the last note when she says the memories take me back to, she's holding this note that is clashing against the chord.
But if I was to say, I regret it, would it be nothing? Because every time I think about it, memories take me back to all of a wildest time.
But boom, doesn't fit.
No, and we're waiting for the chorus for the resolution. So it like projects us towards the chorus so we can resolve that chord.
And here's the musical theater version, the piano version. Let's hear that dissonant add four chord at the end. Very pretty.
Mm.
Crunchy at the end there,
That looks like, you know, three quarters of the way through the first act.
And
really?
Yeah, well, the three quarters of the way, that's usually the bridge. The bridge in a pop song, the two-thirds
mark.
No,
but I'm talking about through the musical.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the characters set out some intention. They're facing adversity. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, sure. That's
resolve the chord.
In a chord.
Before the intermission.
And here's our chorus. We've heard it before, but this time I'll play the main melody note so we can follow the dissonance and try to hear when are the chords dissonant in the phrase. And it's in the middle and the end. So the chorus gives us both.
Okay.
So we have four chords. The chords here go, it's just alternating between C and B flat. And B flat in this case, we could use a term that sometimes people use in music theory and analysis, a neighbor chord.
Okay.
Where the kind of driving function of the section is the C and the B flat is like a pivot backwards, neighboring back and forth. We can talk about that maybe in another podcast.
I love
podcast
that though.
More.
That's like a really, it makes it really easy for me to understand. I like
it's a good
that
term.
Metaphor. Yeah.
I like neighbor chords. And so it's those neighbor chords that have the dissonance.
Yeah.
And it's the B flat again, the Seasons of Love chord.
Always the
so
B flat.
The second and fourth. So we get the ninth and then we get the major seventh on the fourth. So we get it in the middle of the phrase to pull us forward, but also at the end of the phrase, like the pre-chorus. So we have a constant pull, 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 pull.
You know what they say about B flat? It's also A sharp.
Absolutely right. But if you wrote it like that in this key, you'd be
They'd
bonkers.
Be like, you'd be bonkers.
Because you
got
to have a B and an A. Leave the A alone.
Right.
The
it's
B
not
is
a neighbor
flat.
Chord then.
Well, it would just
It'd
be
still
confusing.
Be the same chord because notes and chords
It'd
are
just
different
be confusingly
things.
Written. So let's hear the pianos playing to emphasize the second and fourth chord having the clash.
Okay.
That one. And this one. And that one's on the high note, so that almost is a little bit like Spandau Ballet, Marvin Gaye money note going on. So the bridge is the only other section, and that's the two-thirds of the way point of max tension. But guess what? There's no chords, really.
So what are you even saying then? There's no chords.
The sort of the chord would just be the bass and guitar playing D minor. There's no chord progression. But we get visions of our love. Neighbor tone is what that's called.
They're like
that vision
back and forth.
Is the seven neighboring between the C and the D. So it's dissonant, but we don't have a harmonic progression. So I can't like talk about which chords being more tense because they're all equal. So this is just an example of over the course of this song, we see the push and pull of a melody and its accompanying harmony varying based on the needs of the section, right? So like the verse, we saw it in the middle. We're not leading towards anything, but we're keeping us moving through the verse. The pre-chorus, it was at the end pulling us to the chorus. And then the chorus gave us both because the chorus is the most motoric part, right? The part that's moving forward, the catchy part, the part where one chord sort of leads to the next chord. We have, like I said, the neighbor chord, which whenever you hear a neighbor chord, it implies you're going to go back to that first chord. So we have the sense of constant instability.
What's the word you used? Motoric?
Motoric.
I've never heard that
word
before. Like
with a motor, right?
Oh,
moving forward, right?
Yeah, okay.
Motoric rhythm, right, would be like something driving
rhythm, right? I've just never heard it like conjugated that way.
It's a good word.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that is a conjugation, isn't it?
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I'm going to give you some more examples of songs that sort of use harmony and melody and the connection of those two things to pace the song formally. Now, how can I ever think of which artists I should play? What would Haim look to?
Either Taylor Swift or I hope it's Rent, if I'm being honest. All I can think about is Rent now. But
no, we're going to go back to Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, nice.
Here's Everywhere Again.
Very good.
Here's Everywhere Again. I'm going to tell you what you should be listening for.
Thanks, Mark.
The melody. No, but don't.
Mark gets sensitive when I accuse him of mansplaining.
Or, yeah, I'm mansplaining. Or we
but
can
you're
listen.
An expert in the field. You can this explain
is,
it to
this
me.
Is an audio form. Or I can play the song and then say, what did you hear, Nicole?
And that's,
and then
I don't like
you don't
either.
Get it right. And I go, well, no. Everybody, Jesus Christ.
You're not the mansplaining.
I am mansplaining.
You're smart and you know
but
about it.
I am the musician.
Yeah, you are. And I don't know. Okay. I'm asking.
The first and third chord of Everywhere in the verse section. Yeah, so in the song that we're about to hear, mansplaining aside, we have basically the alternation of a few different chords. But it's on the first and third that we get the dissonance. And I don't need to get into what notes those are or which chords. But when we get to the chorus, we have more of the Spandau Ballet high note that clashes. But basically just notice that your first and your third are tense. Your second and your fourth chord in the progression are not.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I'm falling and I don't know what to say. I'll speak a little louder.
So there. Not there. This one, yes. Not that one. And now all this is sort of...
Yeah, you just really... In the first... The first time we hear that phrase, it doesn't resolve in the final chord that brings us to probably the chorus, maybe. It just... It repeats back to the beginning and you're like, just get to the high note already. Just get there. That's where I want you to go.
You want it. You want it. Yeah. All right. Here's our Sheryl Crow example.
Yes.
Soak up the sun. This time you're going to have some similar chords. There's another four chord here. The second and fourth chord in the phrase are where the dissonance is. So this is more like the chorus in the Haim tune.
My friend the communist holds meetings in his RV. I can't afford his gas, so I'm stuck here watching TV.
Now, compare that to what happens in the chorus, the third chord.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Right here.
I'm gonna tell everyone to lighten up.
It's that gonna tell everyone, that one is like a fourth against the sixth chord. It's some weird note.
Yeah.
That... I feel like that's more like the verse in the Haim song, pulling us, pulling us, pulling us.
You know, Mark, I will say I don't feel mansplained to at all, but I do feel...
Well, that's too bad because I've...
You're trying.
I
do feel a little bit tricked.
Really?
Because at the beginning of this episode, you said, you know, who do you feel like Haim is derivative of? And I said these artists, and then you played these examples. And I was equating it more because of like the tone and the vibe and
that's
the look
started,
and the outfit and all that. But now you've taught me something, which I hate, and that...
It's all right. You'll forget it. It's
they're
fine.
Not derivative because of just their aesthetic. They're derivative because, like, musically, they're using similar conventions in their songwriting. And that's pretty smart.
But that's style, you know? Their style of songwriting is influenced by these songwriters, you know? I think.
Yeah. And I was talking about, like, bell-bottom style.
Oh.
And, like, look.
You think their aesthetic is influenced a lot?
I think that, maybe. Sheryl Crow and Haim,
sure.
Yeah.
Cool,
I think
good
their
for
aesthetic.
Them.
Yeah, it's awesome. The aesthetic, I'm in.
I mean, I think they know their place in music history to a certain extent. They know what they represent, a lineage of, you know, pop rock artists from the last 50 years or whatever.
Yeah. And they have agency to honor that lineage because they're allowed to borrow influence from other artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. How nice. For,
okay,
like, the next thing.
So I know we're going to do a sidetrack talking about family bands, but let me just pretend we were the Haim sisters.
Okay.
And 10 years younger or whatever, or 5 years, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of the stage vibe, we were talking about like Alana being the chatty one.
Yeah.
If you had a family band, I know you have one sister, older sister, and I have one brother, older. If you had a family band, we've established that both of our siblings are scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the vibe if you had a family band on stage with you, even just your sister? Maybe your mom could be in there or whatever, but what do you think?
I would definitely be chattier.
Okay.
For sure. I'd be more of like the front man. And my sister would be like back of the house, like bass percussion. She wouldn't want the spotlight that much.
So she wouldn't even be the lead vocalist on drums like Daniel Haim.
No, I don't think she would want to like, and she'd honestly be the businessman, but she'd be like the financial mastermind for sure. She'd be handling the paperwork and stuff. She'd book the gigs and I'd be like the onstage personality.
It's just like us.
You know, kind of. Like, I know what I bring to the table, and it's not a business acumen.
Same. So my brother would be the same.
Yeah.
Like, my brother literally did learn the bass. Like, he played to type of being the more, like, reserved guy. Yeah. But he also wouldn't be the guy getting the gig, so I think we just wouldn't get gigs, because I'm pretty bad at the business side of things.
I find that so hard to believe.
But I'd be the chatty and the singer and the guitar player, he'd be the bass or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also probably be the one who'd have to like, guess I'll develop our electronic press kit now. But
No, my sister would be the one like, okay, let's not forget to like drink water and eat food and pay your bills. And, you know,
got to have a shot of whiskey before you get on set. You won't be hydrated enough.
Maybe fair.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. Please leave us a rating and a review, and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media, and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Nevermind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.